So we're back.
We're back.
And we're recording.
Okay, let's do this.
So, Damien, it's been 2 years.
Doesn't even feel like that, does it?
I know. It's 2 years since we recorded our last podcast episode, and we've had a bit of a hiatus, so I think it's worth catching up.
I think so. What's been happening in your world since we last did our podcast?
2021 was a big year for me. I lost my mum in 2021, December, which is obviously losing a parent is a huge thing for anyone. Also dealing with the tail end of lockdowns in Melbourne and getting in and out of isolation was a terrible thing to deal with. The loss of a parent, pandemic, trying to keep your children and family safe, and I was also caring for my other parent at the time. So yeah, 2021 was a rollercoaster year.
Tell me about that, Jim. That's a pretty tough year. And I'm really sorry to hear about your mum. And I know, I got to, I guess, witness you go through that. What was that like?
Oh, look, I was lucky enough to have spent the last few days of mum's life with her. I was there to the end, and that's, I think, a really precious gift that not many children have when they see off a parent, when they lose a parent. I see her off in a way that's what it felt like. I was kind of ushering her to somewhere else, someplace else, I'm not sure where, but it was really remarkable. It was really special, really remarkable, actually. It was a really profound moment in my life, and an honour, I think, to have had the chance to stand by a parent in their final moments, which is, I think, a real gift.
Yeah, yeah, and that's, you know, just in witnessing you go through that, you know, on top of looking after your mum through her final moments, then you also have to look after your dad as well as the family and run a business. That's a fair bit to carry over a period.
Yeah. A lot to shoulder, you know. Yeah, I think there's worse things that can happen, but I'm sure. But yeah, that was 2021 was, yeah, it was a load to carry. Tell me about you, tail end of the pandemic. Where were you? June 2021 and June 2022.
Mate, I didn't have to deal with all the events that you had to at that point in time, but I just remember being in the little Owlwood bubble there. Mm. So, you know, we got to do a lot of cold morning swims and lots of exercise and things like that. So, I mean, it had its moments, and with the various lockdowns and the pressure of being confined, that wasn't easy, I guess, but, you know, I've got a lot to be thankful for. So really, big focus on movement and training and ice bathing and all those crazy things.
Awesome. Did I hear you say morning swim?
Morning swim with a few good mates.
What's that about? Just tell me what that's about.
It's cold, it's dark, and you get into the bay.
Tell me why you would do a morning swim.
I'm obviously not normal. Like all those other people that do it, I'm a little bit crazy. So, yeah, but I think it's just one of those great things where you get to put yourself in cold conditions, which mimics that fight-flight response. And look, I can't explain it. It's just a fantastic way to start the day. Yeah, you're not gonna be doing, you know, too many difficult things after that when you start the day. So have you tried it before?
I've done cold plunge.
Yes.
For rehab and soreness and that sort of thing. But cold plunge in the ocean or the bay? No, I haven't. So tell me, what time do you do that?
Look, we try and do it a little bit early, but even like a cold shower. I know that's been getting a lot of news lately with all that Wim Hof stuff and breathing and things like that. But just, I don't know, Jim, I think it's, you know, we do a lot of work on the topic of resilience, but maybe it's about starting to build that discomfort. So just trying to find things that make you feel awkward, uncomfortable, and really just heighten all of those senses in your body. I just think it's a great thing.
So the general idea is you put yourself into an uncomfortable situation often enough that you become used to discomfort.
I think so. I think it's about just teaching your brain and your body to relax in those scenarios, because, you know, that's the thing about stress. If you don't look for those moments, I reckon they're going to find you. I mean, what do you think? You do a lot of training and conditioning.
2022 saw the end of 10 years of my love of CrossFit. So February 2022, I said goodbye to CrossFit. That was 10 years of my life, multiple days a week. And I decided to say goodbye to CrossFit. I do a lot of training. It's very important to me to put yourself into rigorous, sort of uncomfortable situations for purposes of better health and better mind and better fitness and general well-being.
And I notice you've always got this great discipline. For you, it's never you know, a big deal to get up and do that. What drives you? I mean, what's getting you up and about in those moments, do you think?
Well, I've always been a 5 a.m. wake up. And just tell me again, what time do you do the cold plunge in the bay?
Sometimes 6:30. It's even a cold shower or a bay plunge or something really crazy.
I really believe in that. As far as discipline goes, look, I'm not the type of person that you don't need to really motivate me to get up early and get moving. You know, I'm kind of my body and my mind do that naturally. But I think, you know, there was a time in my life where I couldn't do that. I just couldn't be bothered doing that sort of thing. So I think I would, like any form of addiction, you wean yourself into it, you know, and I did. I weaned myself into it. When I was waking up at 8, I'd set my alarm for 7. And when I got used to that, I set my alarm for 6 and repeat, you know, until it became, I guess, habitual.
So do you reckon it, you know, it always starts with a bit of discipline and focus and then naturally just starts to take on a flow of its own? What do you think? Look,
no one's going to train for you.
Yeah.
You know, no one's going to run that 100-meter sprint for you.
You can't pay someone? You can't outsource that?
No, you can't outsource that. No one's going to make the choices that you need to make for you. So it's a will, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's that sort of very personal, very intimate will or lack of that we have or don't have. There's no tool, there's no hack, really. So, yeah, I've always been a proponent of that. And I think, you know, just going back to our recap of the last couple of years, 2022 saw the end of 10 years of me training. And you know as much as anyone how much I love training CrossFit. But I got so very injured. Also got so very fit, but just so very injured as I was getting older, approaching 50. I stopped that and took up running and didn't look back, really. And still get up at quite early, training for a half marathon in October, which is not very far away. So that was 2022. It was sort of the end of something and the beginning of something.
Actually, what I really admire when you train is you really enjoy that solitude, just that quiet time to decompress. Tell me about that. Like, you're finding those moments on your own early in the morning where you just get up and it's just you and the world.
It's exactly it, isn't it? It's just you and the world. And yeah, you're right. I really love that. You know, I love the social aspect of getting fit as well. You know, when I was doing Olympic lifting with a small crew of about 8 or 9 people, I love that as well. But there's something really special and almost profound around getting used to training on your own and running a long distance without any music, without any interruption, with no one blabbing in your ear, nothing but your thoughts. And I don't know about you, but my thoughts are fucking crazy. Like, my mind goes from one thing to the next, like, in a split second. And I enjoy almost witnessing the ridiculous nature of that and pulling it back and observing it, talking to it, listening to it. I enjoy that. And then reflecting on it later, like I am now, you know, reflecting on it and thinking, geez, my mind was completely scattered this morning. Or my mind was not that scattered and I was ultra focused and I wonder why. So that solitude allows me to process not just other things but process my own machinery. What about you?
Look, I really love that celebration of the crazy nature of the mind. It's probably not a very good pitch for a new meditation app, but the reality is that we all have those crazy moments where the mind just runs down these scattered rabbit holes. And then sometimes you're inspired and engaged and you just want to take on the world. Other times you're thinking on a Monday morning, what the hell is going on here?
Yeah, that's
and
right.
Trying to pull yourself back to that kind of balance. But I think the amount of chaos and disruption that we're experiencing the last 2-3 years, geez, man, I mean, if you're not having those chaotic moments on a daily basis, then I'd be probably questioning people and saying it's pretty natural, isn't it, to have that sort of scattered kind of state of being from one moment to the next.
How do you find it? You do solo training as well?
I do a lot of solo hikes, which I really enjoy. Mm. And it's my time to decompress in nature. And there's two things that I love, which is solitude and movement. It's probably similar to you on your runs where it's just you and nature or you and the world. And sometimes I'll bring a podcast, but mostly it'll just be me and my time to decompress and unwind. And I don't know if you find this, for the first 5 or 10 or 15 minutes, if I've come from the city into a natural environment, it's normally about a 10 or 15 minute decompression which is angst, fighting, letting go, got to be here, got to do this. And it's almost just like unwinding from tech or unwinding from chaos. And that's okay. It's kind of what it is. But what I love exploring and a lot of the work we do around resilience and agility is just exploring how we come through those moments because, mate, that's actually what it means to be human. I don't know who's just turning up and walking around all calm all the time.
Have you disconnected from a lot of tech in the last few years?
I have, but in the last week, for some reason, I haven't. So I've got to learn to take some of my own medicine and just get off the tech because it's just going to fry your brain.
Yeah, I find that I've slowly moved away from a lot of social media. I no longer follow people I know, like friends. I don't need to stay updated on their lives through social media. That's not what friendship's about for me. I've disconnected from a lot of sort of extraneous technology that's just there for the sake of it. And geez, that's liberating.
Tell me about that and how did that come up? Was there a moment or you just made a decision and said, you know, this doesn't serve me?
Yeah, over a period of time. Yeah, it doesn't serve me. And also, like, just reflecting on, like, give you the friendship example, you know, yeah, I don't follow any of my friends on social media for the fact when I realize that I expect more from friends than I expect more from a friendship than, you know, a few updates a week that are photographed and curated and filtered for the masses, not specifically for me. You know, for me, I think friendship is deeper than that. It's more intimate and my expectations are higher. And if that's a bar too high for some, then that's perfectly fine. Like, I'm okay with that.
It's a good one, isn't it? And you get to walk your walk. And if that's not for them, that's okay as well. They get to make their choices and we get to make ours.
That's right.
And you get to stay true to your philosophy and how you are with people.
That's right. I think, you know, catching up with people who have a lunch or having a conversation like we have from time to time, that's friendship. That's connection. And that for me, I think, I don't know if it's just getting older and having less hair, but I think that's becoming more and more important for me, that intimacy that comes from those things and that sense of connection. And the absence of that means people sort of drift. That's okay too. And I feel these sort of post-pandemic years, you know, have really allowed time for reflecting on what's important and what's needed for us as individual, as leaders. And, you know, I work with a lot of leaders in impact organizations who have told me they embrace solitude. They embrace a quiet walk and a conversation over, you know, that sort of noisy social aspect of gathering and, for want of a better word, networking. And I hear that a lot.
Yeah, it's probably one of the most sacred, important things we can cultivate, which is that sense of quiet time. And that's not always easy to transition in. But I guess if it's something that you're going to have a crack at on a consistent basis, then it becomes a core part of your mental health, your creativity, your decompression and your unwinding. And I think it's not something that culture really celebrates very well, does it? I know we did a podcast specifically on the practice of solitude, but mate, I reckon I've been feeling a little bit cooked lately because I haven't given myself those quiet moments and even celebrated those quiet times and being able to transition through out of chaos into solitude.
Why haven't you done that?
I just haven't been disciplined, you know. And I know that in the last fortnight, because I've been running pretty hard, and I've made a reason or an excuse not to make that transition from disruption through to solitude. And that transition's always going to take a few minutes of chaos. You know what I mean? It's that sort of angst that, well, you know, what am I doing here with my time? Am I being productive? Am I meant to be on my own? You know, you have all that. It's almost like that lizard brain starts to come up and starts to run this narrative as you're trying to breathe and just have some quiet time.
Yeah. What does lack of discipline look like for you?
Oh, God.
Be honest.
Mate, I reckon it's just like a cupboard full of really crap snack food. So yeah, I'll eat like a machine during the day, and at night I go, nah, I deserve this. Yeah. There's some chocolate and there's some chips. Not a lot, but lately I've just been bargaining with myself, saying I've been, you know, look at you, you've been doing such fantastic work with your strength and conditioning, eating really well. Let's just smash some junk food at night.
So, yeah, awesome.
But anyway, look, I'm you know, we're all imperfect.
Of course, of course. And do you take shortcuts? Do you find yourself taking shortcuts?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I call it a hack, but then it's not really a hack. No, it's a shortcut.
Course. Yeah, I do that too. Like, you know, I convince myself I'll go to bed early, but then I'll sit up watching something, you know, for 2 hours. I binged 5 seasons of The Wire this year.
Oh, do you remember that show? Fantastic. How good is that show?
God, it was amazing. I hadn't seen it, so I kind of found myself binging that over the last few months. Convincing myself that I would go to bed early, you know, be healthy, but then I'd switch it off at close to midnight and fall asleep. Tell me, what else have you done? I heard an inkling, one of our catch-ups recently, that you, over the last couple of years, you tried something to do with an actor's studio or something along those lines.
Yes.
Tell me about that.
You know, I used to think I was this amazing public speaker until I put myself around professional actors. And I tell you what, mate, a good friend of ours, a mutual good friend, who recommended I do some work at the Actors Lab. And very humbling, incredibly challenging, but really rewarding, you know, just really exploring the notion of character, voice, play. That little kid, I don't know, which we'll touch upon during the podcast, but it was just a fantastic way to really just get off that stiff, you know, corporate veneer facade that we can often present to the world. And I found that one of the best ways to do that was in character, theatre and play. So, yeah, I highly recommend it.
Amazing.
Anyone. Should have a crack at even something like that.
So tell me about it. What is it? So you joined an actor's lab. Just paint the picture for me. What's an actor's lab?
You've got pretty much professionally trained actors and Damo. Okay. I was the outlier.
Okay.
Definitely the outlier.
So how did it feel entering into a forum? You're a professional, you're a leader in your field, you're good at what you do, and you've stepped into this forum where now you are, I guess, the minority and you are the least experienced person in the room. What does that feel like?
Like you come in very humbly going, I feel like a complete idiot, but that's where you need to start. And once you get that and you get that you're starting from scratch effectively around people that are well-trained and many of these people, that's their full-time craft. And so it just really challenges you to be humble, take your time, relax and just keep turning up. And I think I had this mantra, I know you're really good at this kind of discipline, just show up, just turn up, do the work. And we did a lot of different exercises around relaxation, voice, character play. And we got to choose a monologue. Mate, I've repressed all these memories and I can't even remember the monologue I chose, but it was just, it was a really humbling, yet a really rich and rewarding experience around voice and just saying, well, mate, what do I sound like? Is this me, or am I being carrying on this corporate facade that we tend to curate unknowingly in the world as we do the work? And so it's just a fantastic opportunity just to play with voice and
amazing
and theatre and character and feel like an idiot most of the time, to be honest.
Did you try in the first day or two, did you try and hack it? Like, did you professionally?
100%, man. I thought, I'm going to nail this.
Yeah,
within about 5 seconds, I thought, you idiot. Just start from scratch, let it go, start again, start at the bottom and put your trust in the teacher, this fantastic acting coach who spent a lot of time in the US, and we're really, really lucky to get to play with him in this environment. And so you just put your trust in him.
And what do you do? I'm so curious, how do you get over your initial, I guess, embarrassment that you're doing a monologue that you've never read before? Did you have to pick one out of a film?
I picked one out of a film, and mine was a scene from, remember that film called Into the Wild that, you know, Eddie Vedder did the soundtrack with,
amazing.
You know, Sean Penn directed, and I picked a monologue out of that thinking, I'm going to nail this. And I'm like, yeah, you just sound like an idiot. Anyway, but we spent the you spend the first hour doing a lot of deep breathing and relaxation exercises. So it's that whole adage of, I guess, high performance and resilience. When you're relaxed, you get to find the words. When you're tense, you feel quite stiff and wooden. So it's something I've really learnt before I do any public speaking or a talk or even this podcast today, is you just spend a bit of time, just slow it down. Relax, drop into the breath, open up the shoulders, and just start to shake out some of the tension. So we do that for an hour before we even get up on stage and do a piece.
Wow.
So that was probably the biggest take out, which is, if you want to find your voice, well, there's two things. One, you've got to relax the body, and secondly, you've got to find your truth. Find the deeper realization of, you know, what actually truly matters to Jim above all else. And when you find that resonance, that connection to what matters for you, you'll actually start to find your voice. It'll be you. It won't be like someone else. Does that make sense in terms of public speaking and
keynotes? Of course. So you're connecting with your deeper self, and are you listening to your deeper self in that hour? Amazing, of deep breathing.
Yeah, you're just finding it, and so there'll be a theme or a thread that you've chosen for whatever reason that has meaning for you. But it's always been around the deep realization of actually what matters most. Then you'll find the words. It's almost like the words will come through you. Does that make sense?
Yeah, amazing. And yeah. What kind of, tell me a little bit about the exercises that you've been made to do, like you've been doing in the Actors Lab.
Well, lately we got to play around with a different forum called the Actors Guild, and I'm really thankful for the work I've been doing recently there. And it's a fantastic play and exploration around bringing that little kid out, you know, that little crazy, creative, joyous, cheeky kid that we shut down in the world. And it's almost like a contradiction. When you shut that little creative kid with inside of you, you actually shut yourself down. Mm-hmm. You actually almost lose your power, and I've often found myself and others, you come across very stiff, wooden, and you become almost performative.
Yeah.
You're actually performing a role or a mask. I'm not saying that that's not reality, but in many ways, I think as adults, we've got to start to learn how to reconnect to that creative little kid within us, because I just reckon, I don't know, that's where you almost shut down all your power and all your creativity. What do you think?
I think it sounds amazing. And I'm curious how they get you to do that. What are some of the exercises that you're doing? How do they achieve that?
Well, look, we're in this fantastic studio, and the coach gets us to do really crazy things like roll around on the floor, yeah, make all these sort of funny noises and movements. And for the first 5 or 10 minutes, you obviously feel fairly self-conscious, because yeah, there's that adult within you saying, nah, you shouldn't be doing this. You look like an idiot. What are you jumping around like a 12-year-old
for? Not dressed for the occasion.
You're not dressed for the occasion. What if someone sees you, dude?
Yeah.
Well, once you get over that initial trepidation and you start to let go and you start to open up your chest and your body, what tends to happen is you start to have that presence. You know, you find your body, you find your feet, you start to connect into that part of yourself that you probably shut down over many, many years, which was play, physical presence, your environment, and just that, you know, when you watch, you know, it's the old cliche, when you watch little kids play, they're so present. They don't care about what they look like. They don't care about what people are judging or thinking about them. And they've got this amazing power of just purely being joyous in that moment. And I think that's where voice comes from. Mm. That's where character comes from. I mean, can you relate to any of that?
Yeah, I've watched my children do that as when they were younger. Certainly my 8-year-old now, I can see her use her imagination, is free from any form of fear of judgment, you know, certainly embraces play and certainly uses imagination as the fuel and foundation of the things she does. Like, I certainly do that. And I've also seen that peter out as my older two turning to teenagers, which is fascinating, because there's a moment, I'm not sure what it is, it's around puberty or early young adulthood, where it just peters out.
Wow.
And just witnessing it firsthand. And I certainly try with the kids to ensure that we have their childhood present today, because I absolutely agree with you, it's so powerful. But in adults, wow, you know, I can probably think of 5 grown-ups that really embrace that. Most do not.
Yeah, well, and look, what do you think it is? I mean, is it you get to a point in time where you just start to shut it down because you've got to perform a function or a role for the world? I mean, what's your sort of take on that?
All of that, you know. Yeah, I think it is. It's all of that and more. Imposter syndrome, I don't belong, or a search for belonging, and you have to conform a certain way, whether you're a teenager or an adult in a professional environment. You know, you have to sort of wear a certain thing, be a certain thing, have achieved a certain number of things. All of that creates kind of invisible scaffolding that you prop up around you and that you hang your mask onto, right? And underneath that scaffolding, behind that mask, is this little kid that really, you know, some kids are gregarious and extroverts, others are not, you know, but they all sort of want to just be a kid in their own way. And whether, and even professionals, there's this little kid just sitting there hiding behind this mask, and you can see it. You can certainly see it in professional environments.
Do you think, and you know, you talk about professional or corporate environments, even as well as the culture, do you think that's almost a way that we dehumanize ourselves when we just lock up those creative, joyous parts of us?
Oh, without a doubt. You know, you, a lot of leaders just, they go through the motions. They go through the motions in a way that avoids any form of empathic connection with another person, to go on a deeper level, to discover a deeper truth of, or a deeper failing in their organization, that kind of just almost ignoring the truths. And that's what that mask allows you to do. It allows you to ignore your own weaknesses, your organization's weaknesses, your team's weaknesses, and you kind of follow a certain path to vanilla. Whereas I think what you're, this little kid that you're talking about, you know, kids, our inner children, they're not going to hold back the things that piss them off. They're not going to hold back those things at all. They're going to highlight them. In fact, they're going to magnify them for us. And they're going to point to the wart on your nose, you know. they're going to point to where they feel we should be going, which may not necessarily be the right way to go, but where they feel we should be going. And imagine we did that in our organizations, if we actually just spoke to our aspirations a bit more, or if we spoke to our deeper longings a bit more, or connected to that, we might have more connection, more sense, more belonging within our organizations, you know.
So do you think it's something around that sort of being the, you know, that reconnecting to that pure presence, that being really empathic and aware of how you are with people, how you engage, and the opposite of that is when you shut yourself down, you shut others down around
absolutely.
You. You can't. I think it makes it really hard to connect and engage and actually be creative and solve really difficult problems with creativity, I think.
That's, oh, without a doubt. Yeah, without a doubt. And look, I'm no expert in this field, but without a doubt, I think when people have their guards up, when I've seen it time and time again, when a team has their guard up, when there's no connection within a leadership team, there isn't a deeper sense of feeling comfortable with one another, which comes from being vulnerable and being playful and joyful and removing scaffolding that I referred to earlier. You can see that the tension, the guardrails are up, the scaffolding's up, and they want to move to the shortest, quickest, easiest solution, not necessarily the right one, which sometimes, more often than not, is a difficult path.
Yeah, really quite rigid, quite formulaic,
yeah.
Kind of soulless, really, yeah. You know, robotic in the way we engage and the way we play in our environments.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Wow, that sounds amazing, the Actors Guild. And you're continuing to do that.
Mate, I think it's fantastic, and it just gives you a place through which you can play and express and be. And I recall one night, I mean, we've only done a few sessions in this new, you know, with this new group of people, but I just remember doing 1 hour of, like, physical play, and by the end of it, feeling really emotional about it, like, really emotional. I'm thinking, why am I feeling like that? And I said, well, I'm feeling like that because it feels like we shut all of those playful parts of our spirit down, and you kind of say to you, what are you doing? Like, you're walking around like a robot. You're not allowing yourself to play and express and to be physical within your environment. So when you do that, you actually shut yourself down, and then you have this sort of constant state of a, you know, almost an adrenal state, where you're in this constant state of, call it protection, but call it performance, call it guard. And little kids don't have their guard up generally. I mean, when you see kids play, they don't walk around with a guard. So I just think it's important work around voice, expression, creativity, and empathy. And the other word that you mentioned, which was that permission to start to bring your own vulnerability into dialogue, which is, mate, where are you going to get your voice from? And I, you know, I had this great conversation on a Rich Roll podcast where they said, you know, vulnerability equals resilience, or resilience equals vulnerability, whichever way they depicted that. And it was just almost this theme where I give you permission to be a human being. Bring your imperfections, because that's how you're going to flex, that's how you're going to bend, that's how you're going to let go, and that's how you're going to be able to, you know, perform in chaos and disruption. And so I think it's a really, it's almost on that continuum, that little kid is going to help you reclaim your power. And so however you find it, whether it's through play, theatre, laughter, and just maybe the other thing that I found really powerful is when you bring that little kid with you during your day. You might even write a letter to that little kid, which I've heard other people, and I've tried it before, it's quite powerful, or even in a keynote or a talk or a difficult situation, just make sure that you're bringing all of that stuff into that dialogue, because when you shut that vulnerable part of yourself, you're going to shut yourself down.
How do you do that in a setting where there's, you know, a group of high-performing leaders who are in a setting that's relatively toxic and there's a lot of moving parts, you know, there's sort of financial loss on the horizon, if not present, like a lot of stress and tension. How do you even begin that kind of discussion to tap into this source, right?
It's a great question, and it's one that I'm always trying to get my head around when we're running programs. But one thing that seems to work lately, and it's a theme that comes across time and again through a lot of different modalities, and I think I mentioned, you know, you and I have been chatting about that brilliant Jonah Hill documentary called Stutz.
Yeah, and
they've got these series of tools. And one of the tools, they call it reconnecting to the shadow. And the shadow is also that vulnerable part of us, that little, you know, it could be the 12-year-old Dimitri, you know, the 11-year-old Damien, you know, with the, you know, the glasses, the pimples, a little bit awkward, a little bit scared. And it's just really making sure that when you are under pressure that you're connecting into that little kid inside of you. It's really more about the dialogue you have with yourself, which will actually start to play out the dialogue in the engagement you have with others within a chaotic environment or within a stressful situation. Now, you don't have to sit there and talk to them about the little kid, but it's just really more about the personal relationship that you have with all of you.
Mm.
You know, you bring all of you in and you bring, you know, all, you connect to all of your vulnerabilities, all of your imperfections, and you just make sure that the most sacred thing you have in that space is your connection to that little kid. Your really connection like to that vulnerable part of yourself. You may have visualize that. You may even have, you know, often I think about that. I've got that little kid sitting next to a chair with me or driving in the car alongside me. We've often spoken about letter writing to that little kid in the morning and saying, mate, how you doing? Yeah, what are you feeling like?
What's awesome.
You know, are you feeling scared? Are you feeling frightened? And resilience through vulnerability or resilience through humanity is saying, man, that's all of me. Why would I shut that down?
Mm.
And regardless of how people behave around you, you can still create strong boundaries and have really strong spaces around you. But I think it's almost essential work to reconnect to that full part of yourself. And in the Stutz doco, they call it the shadow self, which is all of you, your imperfections and your vulnerabilities. And I find, and I've seen, I've been on both sides, is when I don't do that, I come across as stiff, wooden, robotic. Almost, you know, I shut down my own spirit and my own humanity, and I see other people around me do the same.
Mm.
And so I love that. Yeah, does that make sense?
Yeah, I love that documentary. I really enjoyed that, actually. And I've got based on your recommendation, I've got that book on my reading list. So, yeah, I really enjoyed that doco, actually. Stutz.
Well, and I'm going to ask you, Jim, because if I could put you on the spot a little bit, you did this fantastic keynote at a conference recently in Brizzy, and I was quite vivid because when I saw that recording, you know, it was fantastic how you introduced this image of young Dimitri, would have been age 5 or 6, and it was almost like you're giving yourself permission to bring all of you in to that keynote. And that's where I kind of felt like it's almost like that's where you reclaim your power, your diversity, your culture, your background, plus that little kid that you brought along with you in an image. Talk to me about that. Like, what was the rationale behind that?
Yeah, I think it's not the first time I've used that image in a presentation. It's both a reason to facilitate a narrative, but also, I guess, a tool to disarm an audience, because I feel that, you know, I think even not just the presenter has their guard up, the audience does as well. I think the audience is full of expectation and they have very finite expectations. I think when you hear people say, I'm open to anything, I think that's a long bow. So I think both parties in a presentation environment, conference environment, if I may, have their guard up, right? So I think bringing in imagery and stories of our childhood is a way to almost level the playing field, almost to say, hey, you know, we're all just grown-up kids here, so let's just relate on that level. So that's one reason I did that. It makes the audience feel comfortable as much as it does me, because it taps into something that's my truth, right? The other thing in a conference or a presentation environment where you're going one presenter after another, you want to also bring your truth to the forum. I don't necessarily go to conferences. Actually, I don't like a lot of conferences because it's much the same thing. People talking about their work and talking about one thing they've done after another, and then telling you what to do to be like them, which is the general formula of a conference presentation. So I tend to avoid them. So another reason to, I guess, bring that device into a presentation format is a way to speak to our truth, and no one can compete with that. And what I mean by that is it's a strong foundation to build confidence upon. It's a strong foundation to build a story and narrative on, and it's a strong foundation of truth to begin talking about who you are and what it is you are here to do, the impact that you are here to bring, is to begin from the beginning, I guess, from your childhood self. They're the reasons I did it.
Yeah, and I just found, you know, I love that word of, it's actually, you've got to, you know, the audience has their guard up, so it's a way to disarm them and give them permission to drop in and connect in. I don't see too many people asking those questions when they're doing a talk or a keynote. They're probably, I think it's this lizard brain, they're stuck in their own head and thinking they've got to prove themselves or show people how much they've achieved so they can buy into that narrative, whereas you've gone the opposite and said, mate, this is where I come from, this is who I am, and I mean, that's kind of what matters. I'm connecting into my own truth.
Yeah, of course. And I think a good presentation is, it comes to life when you see that the presenter is the speaker. Is not confidence, not necessarily the right word, but supremely comfortable in themselves, supremely calm with who they are, and supremely connected to who came before them, their ancestors, their family, their friends, their community. When you see someone speak from that point of view, it's the best kind of presentation you'll ever hear, I think.
So what do you recommend to people hearing this conversation in terms of, you know, where do they start if they're going to have a crack at something like this, or even just some basic presenting skills and finding their own voice? Where do you kick off?
Oh, look, I think when you're asked to speak somewhere, the default reaction or the default assumption is that you are going to talk about your job and the things you've done in your job. That's a kind of default position.
Formulaic, yeah.
Yeah. The first thing to do is to challenge that assumption of yourself and to ask yourself, who am I, like, really, in this context? And one of the things I do is this job, right?
Yeah.
But the job shouldn't define who you are.
Yes. Right?
Just one thing you do. And be very clear on why you've been put here and what you've been put here to do, what impact you are here to create, and speak from that lens, not sit in the job and talk about the work. Sit in this other space and consider all aspects. The job is one of them, but all aspects of who you are. The community that created you, the people that came before you, the connections you have that are within that first concentric circle that are intimate and deeply connected to you, you know, your friendships, your loved ones, your partners, and speak from there. I think so many people do not. So many people speak from this other place of, you know, here I am, I'm the CEO of this organization, and this is what we do, and this is what we want to achieve, you know. Not many people speak to the broader context of who they are and the impact that they're here to achieve. I think that's the place to start.
Yeah, I really love that. And there's a humanity within that. And then there's almost like a connection. You know, you're starting to connect with, when you're connected to yourself, you're going to connect to the audience, aren't you? Well, more often than not, when you're actually not connected with your core essence and the truth of who you are, then you're going to lose the people around you, and you're going to follow that typical, and I know I've done it back in the day, that sort of corporate spiel, the veneer, the facade, you know, that need to prove, the mask.
That's right.
And that's why, and I hear what you're saying about conferences, I'd avoid them like the plague, unless I know there's going to be some pretty, you know, some pretty great speakers that are going to carry you through the moment and through the day.
Yeah, you just turn up for them, don't you?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. Because it's your time. Your time's, yeah. You know, it's the old
time is precious.
Precious currency. That's right. So that's right. If someone's going to get up and talk, mate, you show me something of yourself. I don't want to hear your achievements. I want to hear what makes you a human being. And then I'll listen to your advice, your strategy, and all the other kind of craft that you have. But until that point in time, you don't have me. And I think the same goes when we're talking to others. You've got to never assume that you're connected to them. You've got to show them something that's brave.
I completely agree. And there's a real lack of that conversation happening at an industry level, across different industries, you know. There's a real lack of leaders showing up as themselves and speaking to impact. It's a real shame, I think.
Yeah, I know we're going to really explore this topics around impact and purpose, and I think we often refer to it as the work. Like, what's the work? What's the self introspection? What's the quiet time? What are the difficult conversations you need to have with yourself? What's that quiet time for solitude and inquiry, so you can start to do the work? When you are carrying things, or you're in that lizard brain and you're feeling like you have to perform, what's the work to get you out of that state and back into your own skin, back into your own humanity, back into that own little kid? And so I think it's a fantastic conversation that I'm sure we're going to explore a lot more of through this podcast series.
So the last 2 years, like, I still can't believe it's been 2 years since we did our last episode. We've had a lot of beach walks, you and I. We've also had our monthly March 1st mentor circle group, which has been really, that's about 3 years old now, I think, thereabouts. That's been really for me personally, a real moment in time, at the first Friday of every month, that I come together into this space with people who I trust, who I know have my back, and also I can learn from. And that's been a really lovely constant over the last couple of years for me. And you as well. You know, you've been there, I guess.
Yeah, it's been great, Jim. And I think it's really, I'm really wrapped in terms of how the group's been able to cultivate rich relationships within a space online, which is not always easy to do. But I know by the end of it, I'm just left feeling engaged, inspired, and on fire. And that's because, you know, people get to drop in and they just get to be themselves. And there's a deep level of vulnerability and humanity. And by the end of it, like, it's a really powerful way to come together to close out the week. And we feel tired on a Friday, but I'm always leave feeling engaged and inspired. And it's just a good reminder around deep dialogue, human dialogue, and just the need for leaders and all of us to turn up.
Yeah, agreed. Did you do any good reading over the last couple of years?
Mate, I think I've been reading.
Did you turn through a number of books?
Or? Yes, but, you know, I'm not sure if you've heard that great Ethan Hawke TED talk going around. Yeah. He says, mate, don't read the book you have to read.
Yeah.
Read the book you want to read. So I've been reading a little bit of true crime.
Yeah, nice.
Lately, just a bit of bubblegum to switch off and have a play. So
love it.
I'm reading a few conspiracies about JFK. all that kind of stuff, the CIA, so lots of spy novels. But yeah, what about yourself?
I love it. Yeah, I'm a voracious reader. Over the last couple of years, I've just really eaten up a whole bunch of books. Recently, I just finished the book called Belonging, The Ancient Code of Togetherness by Owen Eastwood. But I also made a point of reading authors that are not necessarily based in the USA, Australia, or the UK. Yep. So I read a lot of African authors, which have been really amazing. A book called Half of the Yellow Sun by Chimamanda Adichie was just mind-blowing. It was set in the Nigerian Civil War, kind of a historical fiction. Again, like you, really challenging myself to read the books that I want to read, not necessarily the ones that are that look good on the shelf, you know, so to speak. And another one that I read was a short story by Ursula Le Guin called The Ones Who Walk Away from Omelas, which is a really great, very short story, but it was recommended to me by a friend who did an ethical leadership course recently. And the story is essentially set in the near future where there's this civilization that lives in absolute perfection. Yep. Everything is wonderful. Everything is safe, and every morning is a beautiful sunrise, and every afternoon is a beautiful sunset. There's music and great food. It's just perfection, utopia. But there's a price they pay. And that price is a small child that's locked up in a dungeon in the bottom of a building somewhere. And that's the dilemma of this story. And it's an ethical dilemma. And the story is called The Ones Who Walk Away from Omelas. So it's the people who walk away who don't accept that. And it's fascinating. And I recommend that you would read it. It's a very short story. I'll give it to you.
Yeah, thanks, mate. It almost sounds like there's a bit of a metaphor. So this price for perfection, we've got to shut down. That little kid gets kind of almost, you know, brutalized or something like that. There's almost a great metaphor around the price we pay for perfectionism.
Absolutely. For utopia. Yeah, yes. That's right. I think it was written in the 60s, but I'll shoot it over to you. It was fantastic. Tell me, what else? What's on the horizon? What's coming up?
I'm getting really excited. There's a lot of great, you know, really rapt to be doing a lot of work with lots of leaders in the construction industry, really awesome. Challenging these notions of what it means to be resilient and tough. You know, how do you negotiate under pressure, but also how do you deal with your own inner conflict? So really these notions of rediscovering and reconnecting to your humanity within, you know, chaos, disruption, what do you do with your own inner conflict? And so I'm really rapt to be doing a lot of storytelling with, you know, people within the construction industry on those topics. And so for me, it's always, you know, if you're going to reconnect and refine your humanity and your vulnerability, it should also be a high performance model. You know what I mean? Yeah. You should be really thinking that it's going to improve your negotiation, the way you connect with others, the way you get team performance and bond, the way you innovate. So it's not just rah-rah and woo-woo. It's actually something that is a much better way of being in the world and really trying to challenge a lot of those notions. And I think that the good challenge to that is creating strong, safe spaces for people within that game to drop their guard and drop in and just enter into dialogue. So that's always the million-dollar question, is how do you disrupt and engage and how do you help people get to that point sooner than later?
And I can't imagine that's going to be an industry that's easy to crack. Like, they've certainly borne the brunt of disruption over the last couple of years.
Yeah, I think so. And it's, you know, with COVID and geopolitical conflict pushing prices up, so it's always a pressure cooker of chaos and the need to perform, but I think it's a good space to be in to do some work.
Good luck.
Yeah. And what about you, Jim? What's coming up on your schedule?
We've got a lot of work on. We're a transformation partner to a few organisations, so we've got really looking down to kind of a 2-year horizon of change with a number of organisations. And our work's been really wonderful. We've got some really wonderful clients, which I'm really grateful to have. So I can't say it's difficult or tension filled at all. So that's been really good. I'm taking a break in September. I'm going away for about 3 weeks. I'm going to Greece.
Oh, man. Come on.
Visit my family.
Wow.
See my friends in Athens. I'm going to sit on a Greek island, get brown and chubby. I'm going to come back.
Fantastic.
Yeah. Come back and run the Melbourne half marathon.
Wow. Yeah. God, I'm envious.
Yeah. So I'll do that mid-September. I'll send you lots of photos.
Yes, please.
I'm 4 weeks away. So yeah, that's it. That's what's coming up. So good to be back.
Yeah, really great to be here. Yeah, we're great to reconnect with you.
Well, I'm looking forward to the next one already.
Terrific. Awesome. Thanks Jim. Bye. Cheers, mate.